This is special coverage from WKSU News, Conversations with the Candidates for Akron Mayor. I'm Sarah Taylor. On November 5th, Akron residents will learn who will lead their city for the next 4 years. First-term Mayor Dan Horrigan, a Democrat, is facing a challenge from local business owner Republican Josh Sines. Both candidates came to the WKSU studios separately for one-on-one interviews with News Director Andrew Meyer, where they were each presented with a range of questions addressing their leadership styles, their positions on issues, and their goals for both the office and the city of Akron. We begin tonight with our conversation with challenger Josh Sines. Sines, a longtime Akron resident, owns Bob's Hamburg, has worked as a bailiff in the Summit County Courts, and as a pro wrestling ring announcer. We started off with the question, why does he want to be mayor?
Well, I would like to be the mayor of Akron because I think that I'm a better like manager and a leader, and it seems like that's what the city needs right now. It needs a revamping. It needs someone that can look at each department and just put a new way of thinking, and we're going to look at it like a business and analyze things and look at departments and what they're doing and how they're doing it. And I just think I'm a good guy for the job.
Why do you think you're qualified to do this job? What specifically in your background, when you talk about revamping, what do you bring to the table that makes you the right person to do that?
Well, one of the things that we do in restaurants and small businesses is when we rebrand things all the time and we revamp them. And so that's what we're going to do with the city, really. We're just going to look at it. We're going to try and make it. I'd like to make it an all-American city again, that's for sure. But I have experiences because of my business background, and then I also worked at the courts. So I understand a lot of the crime issues and a lot of the drug problems that are going on. And then you combine that with the small business, and you combine it with I've also worked for like Fortune 500 companies, major corporations. So I have like real business experience. I have small business experience. I worked for the government and in the courts. So I think I have a good all around skills.
You say there are things that need revamping in the city. In your opinion, what are those things that need to be addressed?
Well, I think one of the things was we saw with the snow that we had to relook at the plan for plowing the streets. And we at that time, we didn't have a plan to plow side streets until the people complained. That was probably a major problem. We didn't have all the equipment wasn't in operating order and up to par. And so there were things since then that have been addressed, I believe, by the city. But things like that, we just need to see where we're at and what's going on in these departments.
There are a number of issues that are in the minds of residents in Akron, and we want to run through some of those and get your position on those issues. The first has to do with the massive construction project that's ongoing in downtown. Getting around downtown, it's not easy. The Main Street construction is a multi-year project. Is there anything that could have been done better? And is there anything new that should be considered to make it easier for the businesses, the residents, and the visitors who need to get around downtown?
Yeah, downtown is a complete mess right now. The businesses down there are suffering for sure. Some of their sales are down 33%. They can't get their deliveries from the UPS guys. So the city should have maybe put a better plan into effect to unroll this and think about how the operating businesses were going to keep working. Because anytime there's construction that happened on Talmadge Avenue, there's going to be businesses that suffer. But down here, it seems to be real particular. It's a pedestrian traffic. You can't get across the streets. And then the car traffic, you can't get in there. And it just seems like it's taken, it seems like it's taken forever, but I'm sure it isn't. But then even like down by the baseball stadium, they had to fix it before baseball season. Then they had to rip it back up and do it right. So it's just some planning issues, I think.
So the project is midway through at this point. Certainly you must have ideas about, if elected mayor, what you would do while the project continues, because we can't simply just walk away from it, what you would do to improve these issues that exist.
Well, we'd have to work with all those, the Downtown Akron Partnership and all those businesses, and just see how we can help them and get people down there. The festivals, even the Lock 3 events, have suffered this year. That's beer vendors and that's other vendor type people. But it's got to be communication with between the business, the owners, and the workers. There's a ton of workers downtown in those buildings. Those are the tallest buildings in town, and they're filled with workers. So there's a lot of people trying to get through there.
The city's sewer project, it's going to cost around $1 billion. It's a project that's going to take at least a generation to pay off. Even with the moves over the last several years to shave off tens of millions of dollars from the total cost, do you have any other ideas for whether any other money can be saved at this point?
I think most of the sewer project is already kind of down the river. There's not much more I think we can do right now. I think pretty much everything's mandated. Unless we went back, and I don't even think the courts, the federal court or the EPA would do this, and you tried to lay out a new plan with them and said, you know, oh, hey, we're a new guy. I'd like to give you a new plan. But I don't think that's going to work. I think most of it's been decided. The costs are just going to be saved by finding, you know, better contractors and lower bids. I think the estimates are out there, and the project's going to come in over $1.2 billion for sure. And it's just getting more expensive as construction materials and costs go up.
Sir, there's a surcharge on everybody's bill when it comes to helping to pay for this. The question is, are those additional charges going to go up? If you're elected mayor, can you say that you'll hold the line on what residents are already paying?
Well, and that's something I'd like to know more about. By my calculations, we've probably already collected about $900 million off that surcharge. Just I know what mine's been for the last however long. And you multiply that out times the water bills in the city. So we need to know exactly how much we've collected. I don't think anyone ever puts out there that this is how much we've collected and this is how much we've spent on those from those surcharges. Where do they go? And I'm sure they're just a, you know, a column in a spreadsheet somewhere, but it'd be nice to know those. And then we'd have to look at how much more obligation do we have, and it is going to take, I think, almost 30 years to finish, to wrap this up.
A generation. On population in the city released a plan a few years ago to try and counter the population flight that's really hit Akron hard. Is it realistic, in your opinion, to expect that Akron can get to 250,000 people back up to that point by the year 2050?
I think that's very unrealistic. I don't think Akron's growing. We're adding new people. We're adding, you know, refugees, and they're the students that move here for the university and stay, like I did. But I don't realistically think we're going to grow. The people of Akron are moving into the suburbs mostly because of the water bill is part of it. They don't like paying that, and they also, their property, their taxes. Akron's a highly taxed city, and you can go the suburbs. We've just regionalized. You know, now we're Canton to Akron and Cleveland is almost one contiguous metropolis. You know, like there's houses everywhere going there. You know, as we grow out in the suburbs, so I don't think that we're going to attract more people that way.
But isn't it the job of mayor in part to help try and bring people to their city?
Yeah, we want to sell the city. You know, we want people to love it and be, want to. Akron needs to become more of a community. A lot of times people ask me about that, and I'll say, well, it's really like 10 or, you know, 16 little communities. It's not one big one, and that's where we got to get to. But you know, we got to be realistic as the mayor, too, where we're headed.
So you don't think it's realistic to get to 250,000, but what do you think is a realistic population for the city? And as mayor, what would you drive to push it towards?
I think it's going to sit around 200,000 for at least the next 10 years. As we add a couple companies with, you know, 1,000, 1,500 workers, it might grow a little bit. But I think that's just going to take the people that are already here. I'm not sure it's going to bring more than I could be wrong. I'm just not sure how many people are going to move here for those jobs. But with the housing stock, Akron is a very affordable place to live. People ask me what's great about Akron. I go, it's a great place to live. It's affordable.
You're listening to special coverage from WKSU News, Conversations with the Candidates for Akron Mayor. Coming up in the second half of our show, we'll talk with incumbent Dan Horrigan. But right now, here's more with Republican challenger Josh Sines.
The affordability of housing. The next question has to do with the abatements that the current administration has put in place. And it has to do with investment and reinvestment in all of Akron's neighborhoods. The abatement plan, holds the line on property taxes, on homeowners who make improvements, and developers who build new in the city for a good chunk of time. Is the payoff for this program worth the sacrifice in additional tax revenue?
That's something that I'm really worried about. As we continue to give our tax revenue back, even though it's back to the people with the houses or the business, you know, the developers, that continues to shrink our overall tax revenue that we're bringing in. And you just have to be careful at what is the line of, you know, how much can you give away in business? You know, it's a lot of times it's easy for us to take 10% off, you know, run a sale, 10%. Well, what is the city's 10% is the question, I guess, and how much can we give away?
The mayor would say that prior to the abatements, there are maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 permits pulled in a year. And since that's gone up to, say, 1,000 in a year in the most recent reporting that they have. That's a stunning amount of investment and reinvestment in the city. If you're not a fan of the abatements, but we're looking to foster more investment in the city, what would you propose as an alternative?
Well, yesterday we did talk a little bit about offering more deals with a more contracted deal where if the developer is going to, you know, make some money off the project that in the end they're repaying some of the upfront, you know, the abatements or whatever we did give them. The developers are doing a great job in downtown. You know, they're working downtown, and I come down Howard Street all the time, and they're growing that way. They just did the East End. So it is taking personal investment into the city to grow some of this stuff. So I definitely want to work with them. It's just finding, once again, how far can we go? And how much are we giving, you know, how much are we giving in breaks and abatements? And
on the issue of homelessness, we talked about housing. We want to talk about homelessness. Akron's challenge in helping those who are homeless was put into the spotlight over the last few years over the public back and forth with Sage Lewis's attempt to do his part to help out. The story of Second Chance Village. Lost in that, though, was the question of whether the city really overall is doing enough to help those who are homeless. Is it?
The city has, and the county, and the continuum of care, they have a program in place, and they have an organization, and they have 12 groups that are working hard on homelessness. And then there's also probably about 1,200 homeless people, you know, between 800, 700 to 1,200, that are falling outside of their realm of, I don't want to say understanding, but they're not, you know, maybe they don't want to get in their programs. They don't want to go to the Haven Arrest. You know, some of these people are just true loners. They like living outside in the woods, you know, by the railroad tracks for 7, 8 years. It's peaceful to them. A lot of homeless people, when they have a mental illness or they're afraid to be in rooms full of people, you know, they're awkward in situations. You know, they don't like getting photographed, and a lot of times they don't even like talking. You know, they just like to mind their own business. So there is a group of them that are never going to fall into what the continuum of care and the county and the social services want. But there is still a very big group of people who need help, and whether it's with their mental illness or the drug addiction or some of them that just choose that this is a lifestyle they want to live. And we have to work with them. And I think we can do some things with by building smaller, tiny house villages and having a social service center, you know, washing machines and showers and bathrooms and all that stuff you need, water and things that you need. And then also have your social services in a community room, and you can be working on getting them job training or getting their GEDs or getting their paperwork, their birth certificates, their driver's licenses. It's a big problem, but there's still about 1,200 people out there, and probably 20% of them are veterans, I hear.
Are you saying that what Sage Lewis attempted to do with his Second Chance Village should be a model for addressing this segment of the population?
I think it's a model, but you need to take it to the next level.
And that means?
You have to build actual structures, you know, almost like a shed size. You have to really think about it. But you have to give each person a structure, and then they have to work within. I do with the rules and the community and the how they elected, like their own little representation, like a nursing home has, or I think that works. And then, but they have to have the the basement of his place was the community room. That you have to have a place to get clean water, wash your clothes. If you're going to get a job, you have to have clean clothes, you know, and stuff like that.
How do you support that? The city's already putting $5 million towards continuum of care to help with those who are homeless. So where do the extra resources come as mayor?
I think the best part of this is there's private investors that would do this right now, $5 million, $10 million. But the city zoning won't allow it. If we could get changes in the zoning laws and create one of these areas, I believe we have private funding where we could do something like that.
Private investors, do you mean philanthropists?
Philanthropists,
yes. You don't mean investors who are actually looking to make money on the situation?
Not people trying to make money. It would be philanthropists.
Okay.
Gifts.
The numbers you cited there on the number of homeless, where do you draw those numbers from?
I talk to a lot of homeless people, and they tell me. When you work in a restaurant, you just come across a lot of people. You know, you meet a lot of people. And if you talk to them and you listen to them, and that's what they tell me.
Okay. Let's talk about the Innerbelt, a highway that was never fully built as intended for those who don't live in Akron, have never used it, never quite lived up to its building. It's underutilized and actually, worst of all, a daunting barrier that physically and psychologically separates the downtown from the west side neighborhoods. Beyond the initial work to decommission it, many people are wondering what should be the next tangible steps in its evolution because it's in the process of being decommissioned.
Yes, I drive on the Innerbelt every day from my house in North Hill to East Avenue. And you can look at it now, and it looks like a concrete wasteland. You know, there was some construction equipment just parked on it, but I think that's actually moved in the last couple of weeks. But there's still, concrete slabs and barriers, and there's construction stuff there. And the two lanes that are open are completely packed. Like, you know, there's a lot of people use that road, including the industry, the trucks, you know, the construction companies that are all located at the bottom of the hill. In North Hill there, they loop right down there and they get on the highway and go to their jobs. And then you have everybody from North Hill that's going to Cleveland or going north that isn't going to go through, like Northfield and stuff where it's just a parking lot for a couple hours. So
you're saying there are times a day when it's actually jammed.
It's jammed. And especially now the way they've designed it, it goes into downtown. That's a nice little loop on it. So I think it's a useful road. Maybe because of the way the other ramps are closed from Route 8 South to 77, that everybody's using that now. Maybe that's why it's busy. But we need to look. And every time I drive by it, I look. It's not big enough to put, I'm trying to even figure out how they're going to fit buildings in there. Like, it's not big enough to put a building, but it's not small enough to make, middle main streets out of. So I'm real confused at where they're, they said they want to make it a park. The water feature, but I guess that's about all that would work there.
So 37 acres there that could be reclaimed from it. And I don't think anybody's talking about removing a roadway from there, but the decommissioning of the highway itself would return 37 acres to the city. You don't see that.
It is 37 acres, but it's just the way the road is carved through it and the other roads carved through it. And it's odd how, without tearing up both roads again, how they plan to move forward and make it a useful area.
And so as mayor, you would keep it as it is?
I would keep it the focus on it as a transitional road to the highway, yes.
You're listening to special coverage from WKSU News, Conversations with the Candidates for Akron Mayor. Coming up in the second half of our show, we'll talk with incumbent Dan Horrigan. But right now, here's more with Republican challenger Josh Sines. When it comes to being the mayor of Akron, the mayor just doesn't serve the interest of downtown, of the corporate centers, of what happens in the core main business district. How would you reassure residents all across the city that as mayor you'd be representing their best interest?
Well, and that's one of the things I think strength of – I work in the neighborhoods, whether it's West Hill or it's Shirbandi out there, and I work downtown. And so I understand that there are jobs in the neighborhoods, and there's many business districts, and there's the residents want to see their by their grocery store and their gas station, and they want to see Kenmore Boulevard. They want it to be a viable little area. And North Hill, we have Talmadge Avenue. That's an amazing business district. And so they should know that I'm a neighborhood guy, and I would focus on the neighborhoods. The downtown, I mentioned this before, has been under construction since I was in college. For 30 years, there's been work going on Main Street. And I think the people see that, and the money being poured into Main Street, poured into Main Street, poured into Main Street, then every 10 years we'll fix a little neighborhood. So we got to focus on the neighborhoods.
Do you have concrete plans for how you would make that more distributed?
I mean, I would just distribute the money more evenly. I think if you look for projects, if you go to the council people in their neighborhoods, they have a list of projects that they would love to see done. And it's really, where do you want to spend the money, and how do you divvy up the pie chart?
Brings us to the next question, which has to do with the issue of party. You're a Republican. Akron is a predominantly Democratic town. Is party relevant at this level of government?
The party's relevant only your county party organization is just what that is. You know, they get groups of volunteers together and they help you, and you go to an Oktoberfest and you go to a dinner. But the beliefs of the people, that, you know, the way you run a city isn't Democratic or Republican. There's just the best ideas of how to do it and plans, and it's more of a community plan. It's not a, you know, it's definitely not a national. I mean, you couldn't take national politics, I don't think, and apply it to the city too often. You can do it with guns probably and some of that, but there's not much else that we're gonna, you know, argue with in a city. But it's been 40 years without a Republican mayor. And when we had Republican mayors, we had a thriving business city. You know, that was in the 70s up until 80, and we had huge business. So hopefully we'd like to return it to that.
With a big R after your name and a council that is likely to have big Ds after all their names, is there common ground? Do you really feel like you can work with a council that is by party politically opposed to you?
Well, I think we could. I think we'd have to really just get to the nuts and bolts of city government. We'd probably stop making a lot of resolutions, and we'd stop doing some of the other stuff, and we would just work on what we need to do for the city. And that probably could be a better thing. You know, right now even though they're all big D's, they don't get along. I mean, so there's still some conflict and some split, and I think that they would understand it. We all have the best interest of the city.
I want to come back to something you just said. You talked about stop making resolutions. Can you be specific about that?
Well, the city likes the city council, speaking of national politics, they jump on to national politics all the time and they make resolutions. Our city really has no reason to jump in and take a side on what's going on in Washington, unless it's affecting our city. And some of it is just political theater. And let's just get down to working on what we need to work on. You know, that's an hour and a half on Mondays, you know, those meetings. So let's just get to what we have to work on.
You mentioned one issue, though, that is both national and very local, and that has to do with guns and gun violence. Where do you stand when it comes to addressing the issues of gun violence in the city, and what are you prepared to do to help make Akron safer?
Well, the gun violence is probably the number one problem going on in the city right now. Above the, you know, people complain about the bike lanes, and they complain about the potholes, they complain about the snow. But the real issue is gun violence. It can get you shot. You know, regular bystanders can get caught up in that. So the first thing we need to do is, when people get caught with illegal guns, a lot of times a weapon's under disability. You're a felon and you're still carrying a gun. You got drugs and you're carrying a gun. Things that hit those. We have to keep those people going. We have to send those people to prison. Those are problems. Those are when people get shot. You have to have a gun to get shot. You don't just get shot because somebody gets angry. So we have to take the illegal guns out of people's hands. And we also need to stop pleading out those cases and the gun specs that come with them. And if we do that, and then we work with the youth on gun safety and also not just gun safety, but if you give the youth an opportunity to do other stuff, they're going to stop running around with the wrong people, playing with, you know, playing with guns and drugs, getting into drugs, and when they're 14, 13, 14 in the city sometimes. So it's an overall problem. We need to make sure we're taking, you know, when the police do a really good job, they get a lot of guns and cars in this city. I know that from being a bailiff. A lot of times there was guns found in the cars. So the police are doing a great job. We just got to, you know, once they arrest the people, we got to keep them off the streets.
As mayor, you can certainly have an impact when it comes to enforcement from the police side. You'll appoint the police director, the police chief. You will have say over the department and its operations ultimately. But when it comes to prosecution, that comes from the county prosecutor. So how much sway can you have on that as mayor?
Well, I think that's where we're going to have to we have to lean on the county prosecutor to help us out. And I'm sure that she also wants to cut gun violence, I would imagine, if you sat her down and talked to her. And so we have to work with her and make sure that, you know, we stop pleading these cases up.
In wrapping things up here, it's very easy to brag about accomplishments, but I was wondering if you could share with us a time you failed and what you actually took away from that.
Well, I had a failing business in 2003. I owned a deli, like a little sandwich shop, and it was a combination of things, but you take those lessons away and you learn the second time around, you're going to do it this way and do it a little bit better. And that was one of my greatest learning experiences and one of my greatest failures. I learned more about business. I learned more about partnerships and working with people. And then ultimately that fell apart as a combination of things. There was a robbery. I got robbed at gunpoint. And then like a month later, we were out of business.
One last question. Could you share something about yourself that doesn't necessarily speak to your abilities to do the job of mayor if elected, but more to really who you are as a person and how it connects you to Akron?
Well, the things that connect me to Akron, I mean, I've just been here, it seems like my whole life, because I did grow up across the river in Cuyahoga Falls, but I've been working here my whole life. And I don't know. I don't have a specific thing. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't know or understand. You know, I do professional wrestling on weekends. We're out doing professional wrestling. I love boxing and youth boxing, so I do a lot of the kids' fights here in Akron. I do a lot of that kind of stuff at the Lawton Community Center and some other spots. But yeah, I don't really have a one thing.
Josh Sines, candidate for mayor of Akron. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
That's WKSU News Director Andrew Meyer talking with Republican candidate for Akron Mayor Josh Sines. You're listening to special coverage from WKSU News. When we come back, our conversation with incumbent Democratic Mayor Dan Horrigan. You're listening to special coverage from WKSU News, conversations with the candidates for Akron Mayor. I'm Sarah Taylor. Earlier in the program, we spoke with Republican challenger Josh Sines. If you missed that conversation, you can find it at WKSU.org. Sines is hoping to unseat Democrat Dan Horrigan, who's in the final year of his first term as mayor. Horrigan previously served as Summit County Clerk of Courts and as an Akron City Councilman. WKSU's Andrew Meyer opened up the conversation with the mayor by asking him why he wants another 4 years in office.
You know, when you look at I think the scope of what I've been able to get accomplished, but also there's a lot of things that I think we want to continue to keep moving along. Akron has a lot of momentum, a lot with the region, and it's building on a lot of those partnerships to be able to do that. Plus, you know, leadership, and I've talked about this a lot, especially over the last few months, you know, the job involves a lot of leadership and a lot of listening. And quite frankly, there's still a lot of listening to do because there's still some things we want to, you know, continue to get done. When you look at some of the metrics for how cities succeed and whether it's, you know, growing employment, more vitality, more vibrancy, a stronger downtown, all of those different things, reduce poverty rates, you know, those are generational things that we're trying to attack, and you don't get them done in one term. But you can, I think, lay the foundation for a lot of things to move forward whether it's the educational opportunity or economic opportunity, all of those are institutionals, and getting those institutions to work together to move the community forward and not just say, hey, we're just going to do this. So it's on, besides the city services part, you're involved in a lot of the other efforts.
How do you think that you've demonstrated that you deserve the job for another 4 years?
Any of the metrics for success when it comes to, okay, you're going to judge a mayor by how many jobs that they add, or you're going to judge a mayor by all these different things. And there are a lot of different metrics out there. I've been able to move the needle on the three key things that I said we were going to, you know, try and get accomplished. You know, a real concentration on public safety and a real concentration on infrastructure. And how you move those things is you see a lot of that activity in and around the infrastructure, but also the investment into public safety. Those have long-term effects when it comes to neighborhoods and customer service and a lot of those different things. So the accomplishments, I mean, you could run down a list of, you know, hey, we did this, we did a lot of these different things. But it's at the end of the day, you know, the voters have to sit there and ask themselves, you know, how are we doing? You know, what's my personal situation? And so whether it is neighborhoods or businesses or institutions, a lot of them will tell you the same thing. You know, we're moving the needle forward and trying to address some of Akron's issues. So why I deserve another term, you know, we've been able to earn one, too. It's promises made and promises kept. I'm not going to tell somebody we're going to do this unless we're going to do it. You don't want to get caught in that one of, you know, overextending yourself on doing some of those things that you're not really that good at. But the city, you'll be able to move that, I think, that needle forward in concentration of that public infrastructure and public safety.
There are a number of issues that are undoubtedly going to be on voters' minds when
sure.
they go to pull the lever come November 5th. One of them is going to be getting around downtown. It's not easy. The Main Street reconstruction, it's a multi-year project. In hindsight, or at the midway point now, really, is there anything that could have been done better?
Well, and this is something that we think about on a daily and a weekly basis, how people are getting downtown. How do they get into their jobs? How do they get into the hospitals? And actually, it goes back about 3 years. We actually started a website called driveakron.com to help people navigate in and around. But when you throw in the state's work when it comes to Main and Broadway, and then they'll eventually move to the Central Interchange, our sewer project and that, it just made a lot of sense to be able to get some of that done as quickly as possible. Plus, infrastructure involves digging things up sometimes. And that is an inconvenience, but if you would have given us the option of saying, hey, listen, don't do it, and then people can get around a little bit better, or do it, and then it'll be a little bit more of an inconvenience. And you saw kind of an example of that over the weekend. You know, we had a water main break downtown, you know, that was from 1881. So we can't make that progress unless we dig it up.
When it comes to hearing the concerns that residents have, that businesses have, that visitors have, that when it comes to getting around and being responsive beyond the website, is there anything new that's being considered to make it a little bit easier, to make it a little less painful?
Well, as the next phase comes along, once we start to go north from about the federal building to the north side, we'll probably do smaller chunks of that at a time as opposed to crossing Market Street. It's also a shorter stretch to be able to do it. But when you look at that one stretch from Cedar all the way to University or even past Lock 3, and you throw in the private investment with the Bowery Project, that means there's a lot of activity down there. So there's a concentration of that, even on top of, you know, the combined sewer project, which is fairly close with the inner belt and the other side. So it's a big concentration of what needs to get fixed. It just has not been fixed in so long. And so as we learn from that, as far as going north, we'll do smaller chunks of it at a time.
You mentioned the sewer project. $1 billion. It's a project that's going to take at least a generation to pay off. Even with the moves over the last several years to shave off tens of millions of dollars, do you have any other ideas for whether there's more money, other money that can be saved?
Yeah, we actually have a couple. We have a pending Second Amendment in front of the federal judge at this time, and he is considering, and that will be able to save some more money. And the final phase of the project, which a lot of that construction will be done up in and around the north side, up around that hamburger place we were just talking about on Cuyahoga Falls Avenue. But if you look at that, we have some very good ideas to be able to hopefully take down the dam, which has long been a concern of the Ohio EPA and us, and be able to restore the river, you know, to kind of its natural flow and where it goes, but also do some other things engineering-wise and still achieve the same benefit of cleaning up the water and not putting those combined sewer overflows back into the river by doing some other things as opposed to building a tunnel. So yeah, we have some other ideas, and that'll be we'll go forward with a third amendment after we get a ruling on the Second Amendment, and we should be able to save a significant amount of money.
The fact that the city is still finding areas where it can save money and still looking to adjust the total price tag of the project itself. Somebody who's looking at this overall might say, well, why didn't the city just figure this all out to begin with?
Well, a lot of that has to do with, you know, we actually started on the project in the early 90s when it comes to that. And that even is a predecessor to the Clean Water Act back in the early 70s. And so as we started to address this, you know, technologies change, materials change, ideas change about, you know, how you're going to be able to fix those things. And so it's really the consent decree to me is a living document that if there was a technology that came along in 2 years, that would be able to reduce, you know, the cost of doing something. Wouldn't you want to employ that for future generations? So it's always trying to figure out some of those best practices. You know, we talk to a lot of other cities who have consent decrees and ask them too, you know, what are some of the things that you're doing to be able to mitigate some of those costs in the future? Because a lot of them, it's you're right, it's a multi-generational project to be able to pay for and to be able to do. You know, but we're quite proud of the fact that we've been able to get a significant amount of construction done since 2014.
Can you reassure residents and all those who actually pay into the project because it goes beyond Akron, those who are paying in a way on their water bills to help support this project, that they're not going to have to pay even more on their bills in the future to support this project?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, when you make some of those promises and you don't keep them, it's even the worst part of it. But we did pledge not to raise water rates, and that's how the sewer rates are based, is on your water consumption to be able to do that until not raise them before 2021. And I don't want to promise to say, hey, listen, we're not going to raise them again. I just don't know, just because based on the cost of the project and what that Second and Third Amendment will eventually bring.
Why 2021?
With the way the projects are funded right now, everything is fine. It depends on, you know, the future engineering of what we try to employ from 21 to 26. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, part of that Third Amendment and being able to get the things like the Gorge Dam down, which is one of the last, you know, dams along the Cuyahoga River. And, you know, 50 years ago, the river caught fire, and now we're celebrating as a water trail throughout the Northeast Ohio. So those are proud moments. And we take our responsibility for the Cuyahoga River pretty seriously, as evidence that, you know, we've spent, you know, probably close to $600 million to be able to clean the river so far and taken out literally billions of gallons that will eventually have flowed into the river. So it's a serious endeavor that we take, you know, like I said, on a weekly and a daily basis.
You're listening to special coverage from WKSU News, Conversations with the Candidates for Akron Mayor. If you missed our conversation with Republican Josh Sines, you can find that at WKSU.org. Now here's more with incumbent Democrat Dan Horgan. Early on in your administration, the city released its plan to try and counter the population flight that's really hit Akron hard. Is it really realistic to expect that Akron's going to get to 250,000 in population again by 2050? Related to that, so far, what's working in the plan and what's not?
Well, I'll tell you, in the very beginning, you had mentioned that, you know, we had a population goal of 250,000 by 2050. I didn't want to do this and run for this job to manage our own decline. So one of the things that we have is this, we have a lot of capacity. We have capacity for growth. So we ask a key question out there, is that why would people want to come to Akron? And you know, this, it's a customer service question as much as anything else. And so whether people were leaving or not even considering moving into, and we've tried to address some of those things. And some of the things that we found is that we have a lot of amenities when it comes to the natural resources and our parks. One of the things that we were lacking was actually new housing. And so we've been very aggressive with tax abatement to be able to, you know, for people to start and to build new houses. Each one of those groups are going to be different. You know, I've always said that, you know, we're not going to be able to recreate the ocean on the outskirts of Akron. And so when it comes to population decline, you know, it's a lot of Midwestern cities and even as a region. So as we compete for talent, you know, we're competing for talent that goes all over the globe. There are a lot of studies that say there's a lot more people working from home. How do we compete and give them, you know, the best education and the best amenities for you to be able to raise your families right here? And it's an it's an evolving question to be able to say, how's our population going? But what are we doing to be able to help attract people to be here? And a key part of that is immigration. We have a significant number of refugees and immigrants that have moved into the city that have kind of stemmed that decline. We're hoping to build upon that by offering them the same amenities that they would maybe get and go somewhere else.
You mentioned the tax abatements, mm-hmm. and the idea is that if you build new in Akron or you make improvements to your existing home, you're going to see no additional property taxes for, it's a 15-year period. So the question is, does there come a point where so many people are taking advantage of this that it's going to actually hurt the city in terms of bottom-line revenue coming in?
Well, I think you're... What I think you may be getting at is a concept called gentrification. And our housing market has been so stagnant for so long. We built more houses during the Depression than we have in the last 15 years. So we have such a long way to go to be able to make that determination of saying what's the balance of how we incentivize people. And I learned it right here on the campus of Kent State University when it comes to incentivizing people to do something. One of our keys is that people wanted to see new houses. So how do we incentivize people to move in? And we think this is an excellent incentive for be able to, you know, with new home construction at some point in the future. And, you know, we look at model cities like Cleveland, like Columbus, and like Pittsburgh who adopted similar programs. Where's the cutoff at some particular point? We're about a year and a half or 2 years into it. I can say we're not necessarily close because we need to see that momentum when it comes to home construction and people moving in. And then I think it's down the road where you start to make an assessment of, you know, what's the negative impact on us or on schools or on the environment.
And in this case, gentrification is not necessarily a good word. That's where you're looking at this cutoff, where you're talking about ensuring that the people who live in Akron, who call it home, aren't pushed out of the way in the name of progress.
And that's something that we look at literally when we're planning everywhere, making sure people are able to stay in their homes. But it also dovetails into, you know, our age-friendly initiative when it comes to how do we keep seniors in their home? How do we keep people in the neighborhoods? It's by saying to them, what are the things that you need? Is it a revitalized business district? Is it a park that's a little bit better? Is it access to X? There's a lot of different answers into that question of saying what each individual neighborhood or business district needs. We're taking a pretty holistic approach. I think people have made the argument that, you know, you can't do downtown development, which is a significant neighborhood where about 50,000 people come to work and go to school every day, but also can't do neighborhood redevelopment. We're doing both through Great Streets and through the Parks Challenge and through downtown. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. And those things that we do, it's a balance of where that investment goes. I believe we're making significant investment in each of those neighborhoods, and they each have different needs. And so what are those in assessing what those needs are and not necessarily doing a top-down approach and saying, hey, we're going to do streetlights and sidewalks and you guys figure out the rest. This is a pretty holistic and ground-up approach.
Public safety. How serious of a problem do you think the issue of gun violence is in Akron? Where do you stand on the issues surrounding gun violence? And what are you prepared to do? What additional steps are you prepared to take to make the city safer?
There are a significant number of things that we've done the first 4 years. And it's probably the one issue, and I've talked to peers around the country, and you know, there are organizations within the Conference of Mayors that are trying to work to sensible solutions when it comes to gun violence and the flow of guns, even across the country with the mayors against gun violence. We seize a lot of guns off the streets on a weekly and monthly basis. And it's this argument out there is that, you know, what's the flow of illegal guns and people's rights with guns? We've had just talked to the governor's office before his announcement about some of our ideas about how do we reduce gun violence. One of the things, you know, is stricter access is when it comes to the red flag laws and that whole process. But also when it comes to assault weapons and high capacity magazines, there's not a reason a weapon of war should be able to be sold. But there's a common sense approach to this. And it's not the subjects that necessarily upset people. It's how we talk to each other about them. So I think there's some common sense approaches of which we talked with, you know, not only the State House, but our federal representatives to be able to do some of those things and get them, because quite frankly, we have such a restrictive environment when it comes to preemption on state laws. Pennsylvania does. There's a lot of states that do. Our point has always been when it comes to mayors, and it's probably the single biggest issue that we have the least amount of control over when it comes to those illegal guns. And it's not taking guns out of people's hands who are legally allowed to own them. What's the common sense approach so people who don't need, who shouldn't have a gun, have access to those. And that has a lot to do with the flow of illegal guns, of which we have a significant amount of resources when it comes to the Gun Violence Reduction Task Force. We've done a youth violence reduction task force, too, with different organizations. So we put a lot of thought and a lot of resources into reducing that. In your beginning part, when you asked how significant of a problem is, it's significant for cities across the country about that access to guns.
On the issue of homelessness, Akron's challenge in helping those who are homeless was put into the spotlight over the last few years over the public back and forth over one man's attempt, Sage Lewis, to do his part to help, the story of Second Chance Village. Lost in that, though, really was the question of whether the city overall is doing enough to help those who are homeless. Is it?
Oh, I came to the conclusion early on that, you know, we do a significant amount to help people who are in a homeless situation. And it usually involves much more than just, hey, I just lost my house, and whether there are some other mitigating issues to be able to do that. We contribute about $5 million a year to the Continuum of Care, which is made up of, you know, a number of organizations that address whether it's a housing option, whether it's mental health, whether it's addiction. So a lot of times, you know, the loudest voice necessarily got the most publicity when it came to that. But it really kind of took away from a lot of the efforts of the care organization that has been doing this for years and addressing those particular issues for years. And it always came down to whether it was, are tents a viable housing option for people. And I've talked to other mayors across the country when it came to tent cities and allowing those. And many of them said, you know, we didn't allow them at the very start, and we've been able to manage the issue. Others did allow them, and they had to go back in and then kind of take down those 10 issues just because of the other issues around public safety and public health that it created. And so it was a zoning issue. I didn't think that the issues raised were necessarily the worst ones, because whether it was a daytime drop-in center or some other connection that we can make with people who need those particular services, we were always and certainly always willing to help people make those connections. And the care organization does that exactly on a daily basis.
$5 million is a lot of money, but is it enough money?
I think it is. And I'll tell you, you know, we're able to, and people do come from other areas because of, you know, the ease to be able to get into that system. Is $5 million enough? Is it the city's sole responsibility to be able to help that? No, we partner with a lot of other organizations, whether it's ADM or CSB or all the, you know, Battered Women's Shelter. There's a lot of organizations involved, CSS, that help in with that issue. That's just our contribution. I'm sure if you added up the entire budgets of all of those, it is significant, and I do think it's enough.
You're listening to special coverage from WKSU News, Conversations with the Candidates for Akron Mayor. If you missed our conversation with Republican Josh Sines, you can find that at WKSU.org. Now here's more with incumbent Democrat Dan Horgan. Let's talk about the Innerbelt.
Sure.
The Innerbelt, a highway that was never fully built as intended and never really lived up to its billing either. It's underutilized, and it's a daunting barrier that physically and psychologically separates downtown from the West Side neighborhoods. Beyond the initial work to decommission it, many people are probably still wondering what are going to be not the next steps, but the next tangible steps in its evolution.
Well, we've gone through from a planning perspective, and I've taken these ideas out into a peer review across the country. One is the Conference of Mayors for City Design. We did a small charrette with Kent State's Architecture School to give them some ideas about, you know, what are some things that we should do. I think the things that you can point to is that there has to be a level of public space and a gathering place, and whether in our three things that we look to is live, work, and play. I don't want to necessarily recreate Main Street down there to take everything away from what's already down on Main Street, but how do we add something? And it's a housing and a job and a retail sector that kind of adds to that one section going west of downtown, but also better connects to the trail and to that neighborhood that was cut off. It's hard to really get a great visual picture because you have the one at the cemetery, you have a little bit of that sewer work being completed, and the one end on the other side by the federal building, that drop shaft being completed. You almost get a better picture when everything is kind of out of there. But we've put a significant amount of resources, or at least into the planning part of it, into what comes next. But I know one thing. We have to do it right. You know, not many cities get to grab about 30 acres immediately adjacent to their downtown. So we have to do it right. So we are taking a little bit more of a cautious approach. And the good thing is that Dart and Rand that kept that access coming off of the expressway and going on added very little commute time when it came to getting to the federal interstates. So as we look at that entire section, there's also infrastructure in there too. You know, we did replace the one bridge, and in State Street due east is being replaced. So how does that best add to that? Because it's really hard sometimes to find a front door or a side door from downtown from that west because of what the access road looks like. So we're trying to imagine, you know, how does that entrance into downtown from that west side look visually appealing as much as, you know, access to and being able to get in and around.
How do you reassure residents all across the city, not just in downtown, that you're representing their best interest?
I talked a little bit in the beginning about leadership and listening. To me, it's been the hallmark, I think, even of my public service career for the 21 years. I spent a significant amount of time and still do spend a significant amount of time talking to organizations, whether they be businesses or high school groups or anywhere, trying to find out neighborhood groups. What are their ideas for the city? You know, what should we be doing? I mean, are we doing something that, you know, that is causing you some particular ache at some point, you know, whether it's traffic or something else? I think it's continued to do that. You can never do enough listening in this job just because people are always going to be able to tell you, what about this or how are we addressing some of those things? But if you look at some of those key things that we're trying to improve when it comes to infrastructure, public safety, neighborhood and downtown development on top of, you know, addressing some of the issues like homelessness, all of those, you know, the future plan of the Innerbelt, there's a lot of that that goes on literally on a daily basis where we are listening to what residents have to say and trying to incorporate some of those better ideas to make their lives a little bit easier. What better educational opportunity do they have? And so it's me still being out there doing as much listening as possible, but also making a decision at some particular point saying the city is going to move forward and we want to grow population. How are we going to grow population? We want to keep people here, give our younger kids an opportunity for that same education and economic opportunity, but also people that have left. You know, there's 100,000 people that left the city over the last, you know, 56 years. We know where they went. They went for a better opportunity somewhere else. How do we either, A, maybe attract them back or attract new residents to the city?
You're a Democrat. Akron, by party registration, is overwhelmingly Democratic. Is party relevant at the city level of government?
Whether it was on city council or the clerk's office or in the mayor's office, once the election's over, everybody is the same party. We're all residents, and we have a vested interest in the success of the city. And so as I run as a Democrat on principles that says, you know, there's an open approach to how we're going to do this. It's a little bit more collaborative. And to me, I think that's an important part of it. People want to be heard. And I think they want to see somebody listen to them and say, if you make a mistake, you know, own up to it and kind of go from there. But the relevance part of it is that it doesn't matter if it was a D next to my name or anything else next to my name. I'll run on the record, you know, of being able to get things done, you know, and that's that promises made and I think promises kept.
Some of the repositioning, some of the changes in council have been viewed as the potential, should you be reelected, to give you a council that will be friendlier to you, that will be easier to work with. Do you feel like you'll be able to accomplish more with a reimagined council over the next 4 years?
Well, truthfully, I think we've been able to achieve a significant amount, you know, over the first 4 years. And quite frankly, from the very beginning, it's been I've laid out a very specific vision and shared that with city council. I shared that with businesses, with residents all over the city of Akron, and asked them to share in that vision. So as we've taken the ideas to city council, and whether they've approved them or not approved them, I think the record of approval is pretty strong. So it's about building consensus. I worked significantly for 7 years with the former mayor, Pasqualic, on we didn't agree on every single issue. And he would tell me when he didn't agree with me on that issue. That's part of the process, too. So it's not about necessarily having an easier council to work with. We'll always be transparent. I'll give them time. What are some of their ideas to be able to make the city better? And that's how I'll continue to lead.
It's very easy to brag about accomplishments. Can you share with us a time in your life when you failed and what you took away from that?
Well, to me, it's a lot of this. I don't have the best amount of patience, I guess, if you wanted to word it the right way. And so oftentimes I think not necessarily in a failure option, but I'll want things to move a little bit more quicker, a little more quickly than it necessarily should. There should be a little bit more vetting on some of those things. And so as far as a specific, to say, hey, this is how we failed, it was never and the things that bother me the most about all of this is that whether people are, you know, whether they are apathy, whether they display apathy or ignorance. I mean, our effort is over 100% on a daily basis. And I can say that honestly because I get to work with a great staff on a daily basis. And so it's never an effort mistake. It's always whether somebody is they don't know and they don't care. And as trying to eliminate those, but it's not effort. I mean, people are out there trying to improve people's lives on a daily basis, which is what we should be doing.
One last question. Could you share something about yourself that doesn't necessarily speak to your abilities to do the job, but more to who you are as a person and how that connects to the city?
Well, you know, I grew up in Akron's neighborhoods. I became a grandfather 2 weeks ago, fifth generation of our family. Those, to me, you know, with three wonderful kids, a student here right on the university, I think all of that and staying vested in, you know, and have lived very close to our family in and around, but also discovered new parts of the city with this job that maybe you weren't able to see before, because you didn't have an opportunity to maybe open up some of those doors. And so Akron is one of those places that they love their hometown heroes. And so whether it's the former mayor or Bill Considine or Keith Dambrot, all of those people that kind of grew up in and around here and have kind of gotten into those leadership positions, this is a humbling experience. I mean, like I said, it's the pinnacle of a professional career that not a whole lot of people, there's only 61 other mayors in the history of the city of Akron. So it's an honor to be able to do this job. That's what I want people to take away from, that this is an honorable position and you have to approach it in a humble basis because it can humble you if you don't think it can't. So I think keeping that level head out there and be able to make those pragmatic decisions that move the needle, sometimes you just need to get on base. You know, and then move the runner over. Those pitches that come down the middle of the plate where you get to be able to take a big swing at it and hit a home run like an Amazon and keeping Goodyear here and keeping Bridgestone here, those come along not very often. But when they do, I think you have to be ready. But setting that up, in whether it's small growth at a time or at least measured growth, I think those are the things that are important to help keep the moving the city forward and not necessarily, you know, keep it in the same position.
Mayor Dan Horgan, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's WKSU News Director Andrew Meyer talking with Democratic incumbent Mayor of Akron, Dan Horgan. In addition to mayor, voters in Akron will also be choosing their next council on Election Day, November 5th. You can find more information about both the ward and at-large council candidates at WKSU.org. I'm Sarah Taylor. You've been listening to special coverage from WKSU News, Conversations with the Candidates for Mayor of Akron.